Hi, everybody. My name is Merle. I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for asking me, Sam. And I always like coming up here. Different times in my sobriety, I've come up here pretty regular on a Sunday. It's been a while since I've been here. I'm not the greatest at doing this, or at least I don't think so anyway, so it takes me a minute or two to get going. I'll tell you, my sobriety date is October of 2003. I have a home group down in Buckingham County, and I have a sponsor, and I ate lunch with him yesterday. And he knows most of everything that's going on with me. I'm still not as self-revealing as a guy should be, probably, but takes time for some of us. And getting sober is taking a real long time for me. I started drinking when I was like, 15 or 16 years old. And I liked it. I liked the effects of alcohol. I didn't know I was an uncomfortable kid. The party life seemed like fit me really well, you know. Before I started drinking, I grew up in a house that there wasn't any drinking going on much. My dad had beer in the fridge all the time, but I rarely saw him getting drunk. As far as I know, I only saw him one time the whole time I was growing up when he was drunk. And that was like when I was 4 or 5, and I never saw him like that again. He might have been an alcoholic, because he told me in his 80s, just before he died, that he came to Alcoholics Anonymous in the 1950s, and the time I saw him drunk was like in 65, you know. But in the 50s, someone recommended that he go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and he didn't like it, and he would just stop for long periods of times. And in the between times, I just thought he was always angry. He was definitely one of those guys I'd call a rageaholic. I mean, like, I was 7 years old, maybe, somewhere in there, and practicing fishing out in my front yard. And I got we lived in town, and I got my line across the telephone wires out front. The sinker went around the wires a bunch of times, and I wasn't strong enough to pull it down. Pretty soon, here come Dad out. He said, "I'll get that thing for you," and he snapped the line, and then he busted the pole in about 3 pieces. And handed it back to me. And a week later, he gave me a new rod and reel. But that's the way he reacted to, you know, things. He was just angry all the time. And so I don't know if he was an alcoholic or not, but he didn't do so hot when he wasn't drinking. But like I said, I never saw him drunk again. But I had two brothers that were, to me, look like it today, that they look like they're alcoholics, and they've always looked like that. And I was never going to get into the trouble those guys got into, because, you know, growing up, you know, start drinking early and drink alcoholically early, you get into a lot of trouble. And those guys were in a lot of trouble. And that seemed to be the only problems in our house, was my folks arguing about what they ought to do about those two older brothers of mine. So I was never going to get into all the kinds of trouble that they got into. Certainly wasn't ever going to do any drugs or drink. And when I was 15, I started drinking and I liked it. I was like, well, I'll just never do any drugs. This alcohol thing's pretty good. I like it. I didn't know that, you know, it took away inhibitions and all that stuff. It really took away ambition for me, but later on. But like I said, it was a lot of fun for a few years, you know, all through high school. You know, I was partying most every weekend, and by the time I was a senior, we were drinking pretty much daily, nightly, not daily. I rarely was drinking in school. Once in a while, I'd get in trouble for drinking in school, but I finally got, you know, drunk enough one night. I started smoking pot, and I really liked that. And a couple of days later, you know, you could buy anything from me, you know. I just gravitated toward the heavier partiers and turned into one of them. And I really thought that was my only problem. I was a partier, and when it caused me enough problems, you know, with the law, I didn't notice it was causing problems in personal relationships, but I just thought I didn't like my mom and dad. But anybody that tells me what's good for me is, you know, I don't want to listen to them. And I think I was like 20 years old when I decided I needed to stop drinking, that maybe there was something wrong with my drinking. And I made it 2 or 3 weeks, you know, and I didn't like it, you know. I was uncomfortable, and I started drinking again, and right away, man, everything was good. I remember one of my friends that helped me get started back to drinking. He came over and he's like, "You're just taking life too serious, man. Let's go have a couple beers and loosen up." And that's what we intended to do, but you know, I got drunk. I always got drunk, no matter how many times I was just going to go easy tonight because of what happened last night. I seemed to get in a lot of trouble when I was a kid, well, 20, 21. The cops quit letting me go for things. I grew up in a real small town, and the whole time we were partying, we were always getting pulled over by the cops because we was doing something wrong and running over curbs or, you know, driving deliriously. I always said that drinking and driving was my favorite sport. I dropped out of sports in high school, and I thought I was a really good driver when I was drunk. And I outran the cops a whole lot of times, and I usually had a pretty good head start on them. But for some reason, I think I was really 19 when I decided to quit drinking the first time. And it was because of a DUI, and I had 7 or 8 charges against me for that drunk driving escapade. And I went to some AA meetings, and I just thought y'all were goofy, you know. These are the dregs of life, or, you know, I was just like, man. So I quit drinking on my own, and, you know, I probably heard somebody talking about God, and that chased me out of here, because I don't want any spiritual help. I'm fine, you know. I can quit drinking on my own, and for the next 10 years, I pretty much tried to quit drinking on my own. One time, to stay sober, I joined the military, got kicked out of the military like 3.5 years later for drinking too much. I was always on and off the wagon for through my 20s, and I had 10 years of the terrible 20s. When I got kicked out of the Army, I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings down in Alabama where I'd gotten out of the Army, and I was ready to quit, and I got a sponsor. I went to meetings every day. My sponsor took me through the 12 and 12, read the steps out of there, and we called that working the steps. And I continued going to meetings every day. I still had a pretty chaotic life. Lost a lot of jobs, quit a lot of jobs. I remember I was probably 3 or 4 years sober, and I had 12 roommates in 12 months. You know, I moved 12 times in 12 months. That's how stable I am, going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, not drinking, and not working the steps, as they're outlined in this book, Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we read the 12 and 12 together, and I guess, I don't know, he stayed sober for that period of time, and he wasn't doing all the crazy stuff I was doing, but he was a little bit older than me. You know, I was in and out of relationships. Just, it was a crazy time. And either I was getting everything I wanted or else I was miserable. And I was going to meetings all the time. And, you know, go to open discussion meetings and people would talk about, you know, who's got a problem today, threatening their sobriety. And I always raise my hand, I got a problem today. You know, every day. Every day I had a problem, you know. Be completely different than yesterday's or still yesterday's problem still plaguing me. One or two, you know. I heard Sam's grand sponsor at one of these podiums say one time that people that are in Alcoholics Anonymous and not working the steps can usually make it, well, sometimes can make it up to 7 years without taking a drink. Well, I wasn't that strong. After about 5 years of going to meetings and not drinking, I decided to start smoking pot. And I never really thought about it as a substitute for the steps or anything like that. I just was like, I got to have some relief here, you know. I found out in the last few years that, you know, I suffer from a condition that is called alcoholism, but it really doesn't have anything to do with alcohol. You know, it's the way I think. It's something that's in my brain. A spiritual disease that unless it's treated with a spiritual solution, you know, I'm going to be uncomfortable at best. And I lived like that for a long time, and smoking a little reefer seemed to relieve it. I didn't know that's what it was doing, but you know, I knew it was not the right thing to be doing, so I'd stop, you know. I just have it here and there. I mean, like, I'd go a year or two without it. But for 14 years, I was going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and smoking pot here and there. And then finally, you know, I just started smoking it daily. And one of the guys that I worked with that smoked it with me, he was like, you can still go to AA meetings and you're doing this? I'm like, yeah, it's fine. And I finally stopped. I thought I was going to have to go to some kind of rehab or something. I didn't think I could quit. But I finally did, and I was depressed for like 6 months. And some of the folks from the Buckingham meeting were doing a step study or something in Lynchburg, and I went down there, and Helen, Sage's wife from there, told me, Merle, we're getting ready to go back through the big book. And I knew that I'd never done that. I've been to lots of step studies, lots of weekend conferences. I used to think that, you know, I could listen to these CDs or tapes even back then of really good speakers, and I would just, it would be like osmosis, you know. I would get what this guy's got by listening to the CD enough. And, I mean, that was from the beginning. You know, I guess I got introduced to an active bunch in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I was one of the guys that was reading the 12 and 12 instead of doing the steps. I guess they thought if I stuck around long enough, I'd start doing what they were doing. Because it was an active group. We went to speaker events and conferences and all that. But I remember listening to this dude, Jim Williams, time after time. I thought he was like the best speaker ever, you know. And I remember him saying, you know, when he first came to AA, that he said to his sponsor, so you think my thinking's screwed up? How much of my thinking do you think is screwed up? And he said, we like to start with all of it. And I was like, holy cow, you know. But I still never went and got someone to be my sponsor that talked about taking the steps out of the big book. I was just, I don't know, I didn't want to do it. I really thought that I could get a relationship with God because I heard you all talking about that, and I could do that on my own. And things were better than they were when I was drunk, but just barely, you know. Like I said, life was chaotic. And when I went to that meeting in Lynchburg and was told that, you know, they were just getting ready to start over in the big book, that's when I met Billy and Lynn and the rest of the Buckingham bunch. And they were reading the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and then they give, you know, at that time Al was doing the study basically. He'd read for a while and then he'd let a few people talk after he got done reading, and I told him what I was doing there, you know. I came to find out how to work the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been around. I mean, Al had seen me a bunch of times. He used to come to our little Nelson County meeting, and then I also saw him at several Pockets of Enthusiasm that he started up in Virginia Beach. The first one I went to was a four-step study that Earl Husband was doing at a church. It wasn't even at a motel. But anyway, he just asked me after the meeting if I wanted him to take me through the steps. I didn't know he's asking me if I wanted him to be my sponsor or anything else. But I agreed to all that. And I always thought Al was kind of, my sponsor was kind of a hard-nosed Alcoholics Anonymous guy. And I'd never been attracted to that. I always liked these guys that are more philosophical. I'd rather, let's talk about our problems instead of do anything about them. And I knew that he wasn't like that. But I also knew that he looked a lot more successful than me right now. And that being around AA as long as I'd been around, I knew the real solution was in the book. And I'd read by myself a lot of different times and never really gleaned a whole lot out of it. I needed some instruction. And he took me through the steps and got me on a structure where I went to five meetings a week at that time and went to the same five meetings every week. That may have been when I was coming up here regularly, I don't know. But, you know, my life changed. I no longer have, you know, days and days turn into months where I'm feeling like I'm depressed. You know, one of the first things he told me about my depression was that it's just self-pity. And when I could look at that, I started recognizing that's what it really was for me. I didn't look at it very long because he told me not to. Because I am a guy that can sit and think for hours about me. And I found out here that I'm full of self-obsession, and I need to be taken out of my head and thrown into trying to be of service to somebody else, you know. Get in the habit of calling alcoholics every day. And I fall out of that every now and then, but somebody that has not fallen out of that pretty much since I've been here is James. James called me every day, and he has for the last 8 years, 7 years, whatever he's been here, you know. And it's been a relief, you know, in the beginning. And today I'm pretty stable most of the time, but I still go to four meetings a week, the same four meetings, you know, every week. Well, obviously, I didn't do a whole lot of preparation before here. I probably shouldn't be talking about this yet. I think the last time I was here, I spoke for 30 minutes, so I'm just trying to beat that by a couple minutes. So, you know, the best things in my life that have ever happened to me has been when I was coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I started out as a, you know, just a drunken kid, and I was going nowhere. And I got two brothers to prove to me that that's where I'd be if I was them. You know, one of them is a guy that lived on the street until he could get Social Security. Now he lives in an apartment, and he got a social worker to make sure that he has a roof over his head most days. And he was a valedictorian of his class. My other brother, all my teachers told me he was the smartest guy that ever went through our school. And the only reason he's got a roof over his head and looks halfway legitimate is because he went to Vietnam, not as a soldier, as a pitiful pathetic drunk that hung out at a Vietnamese liquor store in San Francisco, and the guy told him, you know, you could get a girlfriend or a wife in Vietnam if you want. My family will pay for you to go there and meet her, and you can bring her back as your wife. And he did that. And that's the only reason he has a house, because his wife works. My mom and dad, or my dad's dead now, but my mom doesn't think that he's a drunk, you know? I'm like, oh, I try not to argue with my mom about that. She's 88 years old. But sometimes it's like she tells me all these heroic things my brothers have done. And I know the truth, you know? And it's like, I don't need to explain that to her anymore. I've done that before. But it's still, I call her twice a week because that's what a good son should do. She lives out in Iowa. And she'll come up with this stuff about how talented my brothers were, you know, instead of how my younger sister's taking care of her, you know. It's just like, holy cow. But the last time she said anything about him, I just agreed with her. And that's what I really need to do, you know. I don't need to, you know, tell her what a couple losers of sons she's got, you know. But that's where I'd be going. You know, either living on the street or living off some lady, you know. And I don't do that. I got a house by myself that, you know, I make payments to the bank with, you know. I'm a respected citizen of Nelson County, you know. The sheriff only knows me because we both work for the county. He doesn't know me for any other reason. I used to get arrested all the time, you know. You know, the other night, I'm supposed to go to meetings with an idea in my head of, you know, how I can be helpful to other people today instead of seeing what I can get from y'all. Because that's what I used to do, you know. And, but I still hear things in meetings that are helpful to me. The other night we were talking about the ninth step in men's, and we're talking about mothers. Seems like we all have a few resentments with our mothers. And, Lynn said that, you know, one of her amends to her mother was to make her a part of her life, and that means going to visit her and let her know what's going on. And she can fall short of doing that from time to time. And I didn't go home for Christmas this year. I wanted to make some extra cash because the county pays me overtime to work during the holidays. And I didn't go home, so I'm scheduled to go home this week to visit my mom. You know, I try to be a good son. And it's only because of Alcoholics Anonymous am I able to do that, you know. My brothers have gone years without contacting my parents, you know. And that's the way I would be if I was still drinking, you know. So I'm a good employee for the county. I show up every day at the time I say I'm going to. They told me to be there. You know, I used to be late for work all the time. And this is when I was drinking, or else I just didn't show up. And that's why I got fired a lot of times. And even into sobriety or into drinking and not going to meetings. I remember this dude told us we had to go to work on a Christmas Eve one time. I needed the money. But I said, I'm not coming. I didn't have anything better to do. But I'm not coming just from the principle of the thing. I'm not working Christmas Eve, you know. So I left him shorthanded on the 23rd. I don't do that stuff anymore. They could call me up tonight when I get out of the meeting because I don't bring my phone in here with me. And if there's a message on there that I need to go to work tonight, I'll go. You know, when I get back to town. I do what I say I'm going to do, and I am where I say I'm going to be. You know, and if I can't be, I'll let you know. You know, I call ahead. I've learned a lot of good life skills in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, from guys that are in front of me to you know, from studying the traditions that I used to think was ridiculous that we did that, you know. But I'm grateful that, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is still here, you know. And if we didn't have the traditions, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous would disappear. And at least that's what Bill thought when he came up with them, because he noticed that it was fragmenting back in, I don't know, 1940 somewhere, 1945, somewhere in there. And I do know the history of AA a little bit, and I think that's good. I can't repeat any of it to you right now because I'm thinking about me, you know. But this thing has saved my life. And, you know, I don't know about how I was talking to James. I asked James about this, and he was thinking about himself, so he never did come up with an answer. But I'm like, these guys that get up to the podium and tell these magnificent stories, I'm like, did they memorize all that stuff before they got here? Or is that, are they just that quick that they can come up with it? Because I don't, you know. And I guess I should try to figure out how to do it a little bit better one of these days. I don't get asked very often that, and I know why, but I don't know. The structure that a sponsor has given me here has definitely paid dividends in my life. And I used to be an unstructured guy and really thought that's the way I ought to be, you know. I used to look up to my brothers, and they lived the hippie lifestyle at that time, and I thought that was cool. And, you know, it got them nowhere, you know. And they stayed hippies, and my brothers stayed hippies. And there's some people, Nelson County's full of them, and some of them are successful, and some of them look like my brothers. But, you know, cutting my hair and becoming part of the establishment and going to work for the man every day has been, I only am able to do that because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm trying to remember what it was Billy read in here. How we established our relationship with God. Well, I first started when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous not believing in God. And then when I decided that I needed to come to Alcoholics Anonymous because I really couldn't stand myself anymore, I couldn't live with drinking and I couldn't live without it, I started doing what I heard people say they did at meetings, and that was to pray. And I started believing in God. And I prayed before I came in here tonight. I pray every morning because I've been taught to do that. That's what the book says I should do. And I don't know where I'm going with this, but I just thought I needed to fill in some time here. I would no more do without prayer than we would food or sunshine. That's a fact for me today. And there's no way I would have said that 15 years ago, you know. I just was a foxhole prayer when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't know there was directions in here that I'm supposed to ask God on a daily basis, you know, to direct my thinking. And I really did think that, you know, if I started doing this stuff, I would be fine. You know, but I'm still plagued with selfishness, dishonesty, you know, and self-pity, you know, and I need to ask God on a daily basis to be rid of that stuff and to think about how I can be of service to God and my fellows. And, I mean, I get phone calls from people and a lot of times the first thing I think of before I answer the phone is to ask God for help, you know, because, I don't react well to life a lot of times. I'm kind of like my dad, you know, bust the fishing pole or whatever, you know. But y'all have taught me to slow down, you know, ask God for help and see how I can be of service, you know. And it's made for a much easier life. I don't have any of the problems that I used to have. James calls it high-class problems, you know, girlfriends or you know, I don't even have house payment problems, you know. I live by myself, and I really thought when I got a divorce a few years ago that I was going to have to get a roommate to help me pay the house off, and that hasn't happened. You know, a couple years ago, I told my sponsor that I was going to have to quit coming to so many meetings because I live away out in the country, and I can't afford gas. And he's like, I know gas is getting high, but that's what we got to do, you know. And I kept on doing it, you know. And I'm grateful for that. If I sit at home for too many days in a row, I'm in trouble. I get to thinking about me too much. I'm self-obsessed, you know. And I really haven't thought about gotten into self-obsession nearly the way I used to, you know. Where I just think the world's going to end if this little problem doesn't get solved this minute, and it's out of my hands, you know. But I'm still going to try to figure it out, you know, grind myself up thinking. And that never worked for me before, but the only thing that got me away from that kind of thinking was to getting active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm glad Sam brought a cake. We got plenty of time to eat cake and have coffee together. I think I'm done. Thank you.